Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1 p.m. One 12 p.m. on September 12th. And when we look at what's going on in markets today, we started to see some demand coming back into the commodity complex. Part of the reason for that was because some PPI figures in the U.S. were a little bit softer than expected, particularly against a background where you have rising employment rates and also wages rising. But gold is now back above $1,200. But if we just address the daily chart, then there's still this progression of lower rally highs evident since April, and it really does need to follow through on the upside tomorrow to really demonstrate that it can break this progression of lower rally highs. Silver was also in marginally positive territory in here today, but certainly coming back up towards the upper side of this very short-term range. Again, this is a very consistent progression of lower rally highs, and platinum is back up to the $800 handle. So, it really is going to be an interesting day tomorrow from the perspective of precious metal investors to see if this can break higher. And that is against a background where we do have these rather wide overextensions relative to the trend mean, and also the fact that prices are back in areas where support has been demonstrated previously, and certainly platinum falls into that category. It was also a positive day for oil prices, and very briefly, Brent crude got up to $80 but wasn't quite able to hold it. Well, there are a number of competing narratives going on in oil right now, not least there's some competition between Saudi Arabia and Iran, where Saudi Arabia and indeed Russia are saying that they are willing to increase supply, but Iran doesn't want to see its market share getting taken over by other members of OPEC, and because its supply is declining, not least because of sanctions imposed by the USA. But I think perhaps the more important point that OPEC has been making is that they fear that global demand growth will moderate. Well, oil prices have been trending in a relatively rhythmic fashion now for at least a year, and we have this range which has found support in the region of the previous peak and also in the region of the moving average, and this continues to look like a staircase step sequence uptrend. Well, oil prices have firmed pretty considerably over the last 6 weeks, and there is a short-term overbought condition. We may see some additional consolidation around this particular level, but it would really need a clear downward dynamic to question the potential for prices to move higher from here. And West Texas Intermediate was up by about a dollar, but not able to hold on to all of the advance that it put in earlier on in the session. Again, you still have this progression of higher reaction lows, and it has continued to bounce from the region of the trend mean when it has pulled back. So, as long as it is holding the region of the trend mean, I think people are going to be probably willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Well, copper prices were also a little bit steadier in here today, up about 6 cents. And even on the weekly chart, that is beginning to stand out as the most impressive move on the upside that we've seen in a while. But the progression of lower rally highs is also still intact here. So, really, when we look at these commodity prices, they really do need to demonstrate that they can string together a couple of days on the upside to begin to really pressure these progressions of lower rally highs. Well, in the semiconductors sector today, some of the larger companies were among the leading decliners on the Nasdaq, but the index was able to bounce from its lows through to the end of the session. It spent a good part of the day in negative territory. Well, that's rather positive because the Nasdaq has been pulling back, but you can very clearly see that it has held its progression of higher reaction lows. It was off its low in here as well today. Well, the headlines just haven't caught up with this move because they're still saying that the decline was led by the chip makers, but they don't seem to be talking about the fact that we've seen a pretty substantial rally off the lows in here today. Apple also released its new versions of phones and watches in here today, and the ECG function on the Apple Watch is likely to be something that will appeal to a significant demographic of people probably older than 40, and there are plenty of those. So that's potentially important from the perspective of growth in the company, but the share was down because perhaps the best way of thinking about it is that what was anticipated as a big reveal wasn't quite as big a reveal in terms of the phones as might have been anticipated, and a lot of good news has already been priced into the share, so it is due at some pause and consolidation. I've been reading through a report talking about the way that Amazon is going to be getting into the healthcare sector. There was a news story today that they're even going to be shipping live Christmas trees this season. Well, the share is pausing here around the $2,000 area, but that was an upside key reversal yesterday. And it did not fall in here today, but we didn't get real upside follow through either. But if we look at the trend, particularly since April, well, there are a series of ranges. They're each one above another, and they're relatively similar sized. And as long as it is doing that, well, then we can deem this to be still a consistent trend. And when it stops doing that, well, then we can conclude that the likelihood of a mean reversion will become more likely. What I found particularly interesting in here today was that Tesla and Netflix were the best performing shares on the Nasdaq. And Tesla has got one key advantage relative to other automakers, and it is that it has already spent a good deal of money on upgrading its facilities, whereas a lot of spending is in the future for companies like Ford and Daimler and Volkswagen. Perhaps the more important point is that it has bounced from the $260 area, and that represented the lows back in April. And obviously, there is considerable volatility around Elon Musk, but at the same time, Tesla has been hitting its Model 3 targets. So that's, I think, more important. And if it can continue to hit its targets, most particularly if it can do so without sacrificing reliability, then the share should be reasonably steady. But the fact that Netflix is also doing well is also a testament to the fact that the high yield sector of the corporate market is not under undue pressure. And Netflix has bounced very impressively, really, from the region of the trend mean. And most particularly when it was down last week, that it has been able to muster the wherewithal to rally in here. That's now a higher reaction low, and the lower highs evidence since the end of June have now been broken. So this is beginning to look like at least support building, potentially even recovery. But the fact is that when we look at what is going on in the high yield market, well, the US high yield spreads have been narrowing. In fact, they've been almost completely inert, and even within that very tight range, they're starting to contract again. So that does not suggest that credit is under any kind of stress here, with the considering that the news flow, particularly with regard to emerging markets and the outlook for the chip makers, has not been particularly enthusiastic. Well, when we look at what's going on in China, there are two ways of thinking about it. One is that the state-sponsored bull market that was being enjoyed by investors all the way until the beginning of this year is over, and there is no great deal of evidence to suggest that the decline in the stock market is yet over. But the other way of thinking about it is that China is embarking on counter-cyclical strategies, that whereas the U.S. has embarked upon fiscal stimulus at an already late part of the cycle and is therefore setting itself up for a fiscal problem when the stimulus eventually runs its course, China is attempting to deleverage its economy. Well, obviously, it has some significant problems with non-performing loans, and those aren't going to go away on their own. But as long as they're deleveraging, the problem is unlikely to, or at least perhaps the better way of thinking about it is that there are less likely to be more additional new loans issued into that troubled sector. But as long as it is deleveraging and weighing on the financial sector, that's likely to represent a headwind for the market. If we think about over the last 13 years, big moves in the Chinese market have been state-sponsored. And the other way of thinking about this particular decline is that it is also state-sponsored because they have been making some significant inroads into trying to contain leverage. Well, the renminbi was a little bit firmer in here today, and it continues to pause around this 6.9 area. But what this suggests is less of the real vigor to support the currency, but rather to allay any pressure for additional downside in the short term. And when we think about the simple fact that the Chinese are waiting to see if the Americans do in fact go ahead with additional trade tariffs, there was news today that they may be getting ready to go back to the talks. Well, that resulted in the Dow Jones rallying in the early part of the session, but it didn't quite hold on to it. There isn't the wherewithal just yet to see the market break higher, but nonetheless, it has held this progression of higher reaction lows really since the beginning of April. It's right in the region now of the peak from back in January. It has been consolidating now for the last nearly 3 weeks. So, when we think about that on a weekly basis, there is a wide overextension relative to the trend mean. But it doesn't look like it's going to be unwound in an aggressive fashion. But nonetheless, a sustained move below 25,000 would be required to question the potential for additional upside. Well, when we think about what's going on in Europe, well, Europe is more heavily exposed to Asia than the US is, but the Euro Stoxx index is coming back from the lower side of its range. Now, if we look at the range such as it has been since the beginning or the first quarter of 2017, every time it's got back to these levels, it has rallied in a dynamic manner. And so far, this isn't a particularly dynamic bounce that we're seeing right now, but it is bouncing from the lower side of the range, and as long as it is doing that, well, that's likely to represent a bullish, or at least it's likely to allay fears that it's imminently going to break downwards. But it really would need to sustain a move back above the 385 level to break the progression of lower rally highs from the beginning of this year. And that's at least a reversion back to the mean is not perhaps not too much to ask for, but it's a big question whether it can sustain a move above the trend mean. What I found just clicking through today, when we look at the Euro Stoxx Food and Beverage Index, then what I find particularly interesting is that it has been going basically sideways for not just a few months, but for a few years. And there is a rather mild progression of higher reaction lows over the last 3 years. But companies like Anheuser-Busch have been trending lower in a rather dynamic manner. And that is perhaps one of the worst performers. But then you have Heineken, which had the failed upside break, and then it is right now back the lower side of that underlying range. Well, a rule of thumb from the chart seminar is that a failed break, particularly if the break is more dynamic than the breakout, that then the chances are that it is going to go back and test the lower side of the range. Well, it's done that. Now the question is whether the 80 euro level is going to hold. So, I think that there's a great deal of variability in the performance of a number of the shares in that constituency. And when we look at what they also represent, the kinds of European companies that are heavily exposed to the global economy. Well, when we look at the Emerging Markets Index, or the ETF, it was in mildly positive territory in here today. But I think perhaps one of the more important points is that over the course of the last few years, the number of Chinese shares that have been added to the index has increased rather impressively. So that if we look at just the largest constituents, then a significant number of them are from China. And it is China where we've had some of the most aggressive selling. Then when if we look at what's going on in India, it had a big pullback yesterday and it was a little bit steadier in here today. But it is the outlook for the rupee is perhaps what people are most I think looking at. And that was an upside key reversal for the rupee in here today. Well, it isn't particularly large, but if we see upside follow through tomorrow, well then that would confirm a low of near-term significance. And considering just how deep the oversold condition is, there is the potential for a reversionary rally. Well, the renminbi was a bit firmer, and the rupee was a bit firmer, and the euro was also a little bit firmer in here today. So we are starting to see some of the dollar's strength moderating in here, and that's also helping to stoke interest in the precious metals and indeed in the commodity complex generally. And when we look at what's going on in the bond markets, then the 10-year yield is right in the region of the 3% level, and it's been ranging below this since for most of this year. Well, that's also the upper side of a 5-year range, and potentially if one were to peel it all the way back to 2011, a 7-year range. Well, unless the yield sustains a move below the trend mean, we can conclude that this is a consolidation prior to additional upside. Well, Ray Dalio was rather publicly using the 10th anniversary of the Lehman crisis to promote his new book in here today, and he's predicting what the next crisis is going to look like. Well, that's also the I've heard similar conclusions reached by Paul Tudor Jones that it's likely to be rather deleterious for the bond markets because the Federal Reserve has run out of room, or the effectiveness of quantitative easing has not or has probably reached its climax. But I'm not at all sure that that's indeed correct. The simple fact of the matter is that the Federal Reserve can monetize the debt if it so wishes, and there's nothing to stop the size of the Fed's balance sheet from expanding. That's, I think, the point that people don't want to countenance. The size of the Fed's balance sheet has contracted by about $300 billion this year. But when we go back to 2008 and opine that if anyone had said that the size of the Fed's balance sheet was going to be $4.5 trillion within a decade, well, they would have been laughed out of court. Well, what we do know is that the ECB did try to take, and it's the only one of the major central banks that has got any experience with withdrawing that quant with withdrawing €1 trillion of liquidity from the markets. And it had such a deflationary effect on the Eurozone economy that they subsequently had to more than double the size of their balance sheet, and they're only just coming to the end of that right now. So if we go on, the only evidence that we have, it's that when the quantitative tightening eventually runs its course, then the most likely scenario is that in order to allay the deflationary fears that it creates, they have to go for even more quantitative easing. Well, if, for example, the Federal Reserve eventually succeeds in withdrawing $1 trillion from circulation, then who's to say that they won't start to increase it once more? And that's a potential outcome. So when we think about where is the liquidity going to come from to stoke another bull market and to see this secular bull market reignited after the next substantial pullback, well, quantitative easing has got to be one of the most likely scenarios. considering that it does do a good deal of the work that central banks want. Well, obviously, it does not create the same kind of trickle-down effect that was anticipated. So there may be changes to how it's enacted in future, but it does not mean that central banks don't have any tools to affect the monetization of significant debts. When we look at the Merrill Lynch total return, the total return on Treasury futures, and look at that on a longer term basis, particularly when we look at the trend since 1982, there has been a significant loss of momentum. Now, when we zoom in and simply look at it over the last decade, this range that's been evolving since 2015 now has a progression of lower rally highs, and it's pulling back from the region of the trend mean. Well, if we start to see this index coming back below the 20,050 area, then we'll be talking about it having broken the neckline on a type 3 top. And that would then represent the end of the secular bull market in bonds. It's still a way away from that, and really a sustained move above the 3% level on the Treasury bonds market is going to be required to even begin to get us to that level. But it's not beyond the bounds of possibility. It's also, I think, worth considering that the fact that you had this massive total return on bonds for such a prolonged period of time, well, that was on the basis of yields continuing to fall and the price appreciation compensating investors for the declining yield. It's entirely open to question whether the rising yield can compensate people for falling prices in a bear market, and that is what we're starting to see in terms of the performance of this index. That's all very clear that this is a different scenario than all of the other ranges that we've had in terms of the downtrend in the yield. Because if we think about this longer term chart of 10-year treasuries, the clear correlation that I see, I don't believe that it's a coincidence that we had centrist politics prevailing and growing in importance all the way through the 1980s, 1990s, and the early 2000s. And it is now that the fact that increasing debt loads is being questioned, the gap that has arisen between the rich and the poor, the haves and the have-nots, those that have benefited from globalization, those that haven't, those have been left behind by technology, and those that have benefited from it. These are all questions that are coming up and coming to the fore and becoming election issues in the aftermath of quantitative easing, in the aftermath of the fact that yields have stopped going down, and that is putting pressure on a significant number of people that were anticipating that the bond bull market would last forever. So I think this is something that is I think worth considering, that the two issues are potentially not separate, but are in fact symptoms of a wider malaise, and that the potential for rising yields is something that is going to have both market and social effects. I think that is perhaps the most likely scenario. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best for all of you.